From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, a couple guests for you today. Very guest-driven show. Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com will join us. We'll talk Missouri, Ole Miss, heading into this weekend's game at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. And then Jeffrey Wright will make his usual Thursday appearance as well on the show, brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Free gas for your sweepstakes going on through Halloween. Take advantage of that by getting you a Mobile Rewards Plus card. Use it at the pump, any Blue Sky location in Mississippi, including the Oxford Exxon, at least 8 gallons of fill up, and you're automatically entered into the free gas for a year sweepstakes with the Oxford Exxon, and hopefully you're driving a Clark Ford in the process. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, Highway 25 South. You know that you can get $500 off a new vehicle purchase by mentioning the podcast. There toward the end of the deal, he's going to give you great service, and when you want a quote, just let him try to help you out. Even if you're in the very beginning stages of the car buying process, Corey can assist you, give you a baseline for what is to come. So we're gonna jump right in. Again, all about interviews today, Gabe and Jeffrey. So without further ado, here's Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com.
Gabriel, welcome into the podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. I've been looking forward to this all week. It's the highlight of my week.
Oh, it's the highlight of my month.
It's the best, oh, good.
Best moment
good
of my
I'm
life.
I'm glad to hear that.
This is really what I've lived for. All right, Ole Miss and Missouri there in lovely Columbia. By the way, everybody that's coming up is having to stay in Jefferson City. What's Jefferson City like?
Not great. If you want the truth, it is, it's about 25 miles south of here. It's not a bad place to stay, but yeah, it's homecoming weekend. I've heard that there are not very many hotels in town. So, you know, it's a pretty easy drive up the highway for the game.
Okay. All right.
But there's not a lot to do there. I would not recommend hanging out in Jeff City.
They probably have like a Chili's or something.
Yeah, there's a good ice cream place. Go to Central Dairy and get an ice cream cone and then drive up.
Okay. So now that we've covered the Jefferson City, you would not be a good Chamber of Commerce person for Jeff City.
No, Jeff City Tourism Bureau is not trying to hire me.
All right, so Missouri went to Wyoming and lost to open the season. And since then, the Tigers have been really good. So begs the question, kind of what happened in that game and what have they done since then to become sort of the team that they've become, which is what I expected them to be all along?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play well at all, obviously. Namely, they gave up 297 yards rushing, and I don't know what the exact number is, but they've given up somewhere around 150 yards since then, total rushing. Like, they're the number 12 run defense in the country after giving up 300 yards on the ground in the first game. They missed 15 tackles in that game. They've only missed 21 total since then. And also, they had three turnovers, one of which was an awful interception in the end zone by Kelly Bryant, one of which was a fumble where Bryant got blown up and Wyoming returned it for a touchdown, and one of which was a fumble by Larry Roundtree on the half-yard line, which bounced straight to a Wyoming player. He returned it 87 yards. With no time on the clock, Bryant tackled him, but when he tackled him, it was a horse collar, which gave Wyoming an untimed down, which allowed them to kick a field goal on the last play of the half. So, I mean, fans hate to hear this, but it's true. There are three plays in that game that turned, you know, that could turn a 6-point Wyoming loss into a 20-point Missouri win, and that's, like, you can't take those plays away, and I'm not making that argument.
Yeah,
but
they
the
happen,
truth is
right.
When, yeah, right. But the truth is when fans want to know, like, why did we lose this game? Well, you know what? You can also pick out Missouri won a game by 20 points against South Carolina where they had a 100-yard pick six that turned a 3-point lead into a 17-point lead. If you change just that play, it's probably a fourth quarter game, and Missouri could have lost to South Carolina. I mean, every game realistically comes down to about three plays, and unless somebody just blows the other team off the field.
So let's get to the, kind of the current game. Last weekend, when I saw the first replay of what appeared to be kind of a dirty hit, I don't know, we'll talk about that in a second too. It appeared to be a dirty hit, and when I saw the first replay, my initial reaction was Kelly Bryant's done. There's no way he's playing the rest of this season, much less next week. I remember kind of thinking, well, that Ole Miss-Missouri game just changed. It sounds like he's good to go. He's practicing. He's going to play. That he got lucky, didn't he?
Yeah, now I always warn people, like, and I think this is true of most coaching staffs, but I know it's true of this one. What they say on injuries on Tuesday doesn't matter. I mean, we've been told over – we were told last year every single week Albert Okwuegbunam was week to week and he might play this week. Well, no, he was out for – he was ruled out for the season the day after he got hurt against Florida. They just never told anybody. So I'm not 100% convinced Kelly Bryant plays this weekend, but – we did talk to him yesterday. He certainly appears to be – I mean, it doesn't appear to be in his mind that he might not start this weekend. And I actually – I didn't think that. When I saw the hit, and it was a weird play because I didn't know Bryant had even gotten hit until I saw him laying on the ground because Missouri scored a touchdown on that play. So I followed where the ball went when he threw it. And then I looked back and saw him laying in a heap on the ground. I didn't think the hit looked terrible because, like, his knee went the right way. If you saw the Kyle Trask hit last week, like, his leg bent the wrong way. I thought he was done for the year. Bryant, I thought, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's bad. But the hit didn't look hideous. But what made me think he was probably in trouble was just the way he was laying on the ground. Like, when you see that reaction, your initial thought is, that's a guy who knows he just tore his ACL. Obviously, that wasn't the case. They're calling it a sprained knee, which that can mean 8 million different things. Who knows exactly what it is. But everybody seems to expect him to play this week. And like you said, I mean, clearly a bullet dodged. I think it's probably a good reminder that, hey, no matter what happens, you know, you're always a play away from having Taylor Powell as your starting quarterback. So you got to be a little bit wary, but they appear to have at least dodged that one.
I'll go here just in case it ends up being pertinent. If Bryant can't play and Powell does, how does their offense change? How big of a fall off is there?
There's a fall off. There's no question. I actually wrote a column on Sunday morning that said, I wouldn't have said this a month ago, but I'll say it now. I think Missouri should still win its next three games, even if Taylor Powell is the quarterback, because I think they have quite a bit around him. I mean, they're one of three teams in the country that ranks in the top 20 in all four major defensive categories, and that side of the ball has changed quite a bit too since Saturday. But they've got, you know, a potential All-American tight end. They've got a guy that on one of his first couple carries against Ole Miss is going to be the number 10 all-time leading rusher at Mizzou. They've got a transfer wide receiver who's making some plays, an experienced offensive line with hasn't really played up to expectation, but, you know, everybody keeps waiting for that to click. In other words, they've got a lot around the quarterback position. So I think the difference is you can ask Kelly Bryant to win an SEC game for you. You know, you can say, hey, we got some other things that aren't working. Kelly, we're going to need you to throw for 300 and go run for another 50. And he's shown he has the ability to do that. I think if Taylor Powell is the quarterback, it becomes much more of a, we're not asking you to win this game. We're asking you to keep us in it and not lose it and let our defense and running game win.
So that's where I was going next. Ole Miss, obviously, and you've seen them some, they're 3-3. They're a good 3-3 team. They could easily have beaten Memphis. They didn't. They easily could have beaten Cal. They didn't. On the flip side, that Southeastern Louisiana game could have gotten squirrely pretty easily, and ultimately it didn't. So maybe they are exactly where they should be. But they're a young quarterback now. It appears John Rhys Plumlee's the guy, at least for a little while. He can't throw it much, but he can really run it. They've got two young running backs along with Scotty Phillips. I saw Barry Odom's comments about how they've really been running the ball. He's been impressed. I think most coaches are impressed with what they've been able to do on the ground. So we get to this moment where something has to give because Missouri's not giving up rushing yards, and Ole Miss is running right on everybody, Alabama included. What's sort of your expectations if Ole Miss goes into Columbia with this very run-oriented offense that is not particularly versatile? How do they fare against that defense? And how has that defense changed given the injuries to it?
Yeah, I mean, first, I assume most of the people listening to this know that Cale Garrett is out for the season. He's Missouri's middle linebacker. In 4.5 games, he had 43 tackles, 4 takeaways, and 3 touchdowns. He had scored in 3 consecutive games. He was on pace for potentially SEC Defensive Player of the Year, first-team All-American type honors. You can't overstate how much losing him can impact a defense. That said, I tend to think if you have a program that Missouri thinks it has at this point, like, you shouldn't, losing one guy who's not a quarterback should not mean that all of a sudden you can't beat, you know, some of the teams on Missouri's schedule. I mean, if you can't win this game because Cale Garrett is out, then guess what? You're not all that good. You know, if one player meant that much, you haven't recruited well enough. And I don't mean that to sound like an insult to Ole Miss. I think they could come in here and win this game. But the point is, if Missouri's going to do what it thinks it can do, which is be a 9-10 win team this year, then the next 3 games are games they have to win. But Ole Miss is interesting. A lot of people have said this about Florida, that they got better when the quarterback got hurt, right? I don't know if you agree. I think Ole Miss maybe unintentionally has gotten better because Plumlee just, he brings something that maybe Corral didn't, and it almost appears to me that Ole Miss has said, yeah, like, we're not very good throwing the ball, so we're just not really going to try that. We're going to embrace what we do well, and if we can do it against you, we've got a chance to beat you. Now, if you take it away, yeah, we're probably not, like, if Missouri holds Ole Miss to 120 yards on the ground, Ole Miss probably doesn't really have a way to win this game. So it's pretty interesting. The mobile quarterback is something that Missouri hasn't faced since game one. Sean Chambers for Wyoming, he ran for 100 and some odd yards. He's a really good runner. He is one of the worst Division I passers I've ever seen. I mean, Wyoming could have won that game by 3 touchdowns if he could complete passes to wide open receivers 8 yards away, but he couldn't do it. So Plumlee how Missouri defends him is the whole key to this game.
Yeah, it's a hot button topic here, as you might imagine, and I kind of am all over the place on it. Ole Miss is better right now with Plumlee than it is Corral.
Yeah,
the receivers are young; they're still learning how to get open. They're still learning how to get out of their breaks. They're still learning how to get off the line of scrimmage against press man. They literally were high school seniors a year ago, and let's face it, when you're an SEC caliber player at the high school level, it's very rare that you go up against anybody who can physically match you. And so they dominate. And now they go up against every week people who are SEC caliber athletes, and they're making it difficult for them. And that's led to some struggles in the passing game. I actually think Corral played a little better than he gets credit for or than the statistics show. But I don't know. We'll see. It's what I'm fascinated about is I keep thinking, you know, a team's going to take away Plumlee's run and they're going to force the pass, and yet no one's been able to force it yet because he is so fast and his speed is kind of shocking at first.
Well, I think the way you defend Ole Miss is you don't even rush the passer. Years and years ago, Missouri had a guy named Brad Smith who – at the time was the first quarterback ever in college football history to throw for 8,000 yards and run for 4,000 in his career. He wasn't a good passer. I mean, he largely got his passing based off the fact that everybody was scared to death he was going to run the football. So Mark Mangino, when he was at Kansas one year, basically defended Brad Smith by telling his defensive linemen, don't rush. Stand up at the line of scrimmage, just make sure he doesn't get outside the pocket. And Missouri could do absolutely nothing against that defense because everything they did was based off the quarterback run. So if I'm Ryan Walters, Missouri's defensive coordinator, I'm telling him, look, we don't need to put pressure on this guy. Our back seven is good enough to cover their receivers. So So just stand there and make sure he can't take off. Now, it sounds good. I don't know if anybody can necessarily do it. Maybe teams have tried and that hasn't worked. You know, Ole Miss, I think, is, you know, Vandy, I think we would agree, is not good. Arkansas, I think we would agree, is not good.
Right.
And Alabama, while it obviously is very good, it's actually not all that good on defense this year. I mean, agreed. The week before South Carolina came in here, everybody was scared to death because Ryan Helinski had thrown for 350 yards and South Carolina averaged 7 yards a carry against Alabama. And everybody said, man, what are they going to do against this defense? They did nothing. They had a 1 yard touchdown drive and then they scored on a 75 yard screen pass. That Helinski was awful. South Carolina ran for like 1.2 yards a carry. So I think this is an adjustment for people to say, just because you put up numbers on Alabama, like, they don't care if you put up numbers against them because they're going to score 58 points every time they take the field.
The Oxford Exxon podcast is also brought to you by the College Corner. It's your one-stop Rebel shop now with two locations in the Jackson area in Ridgeland next to Fleet Feet and the new location in Flowood next to Half Shell. If you don't live in Jackson, that's not a problem. You can visit them online at collegecornerstore.com. Plus Facebook and Instagram. Don't waste your game day in Oxford stuck in traffic and long lines to get your gear. Stop by before you go, and their staff will have you in and out and on your way. The College Corner has you covered for all your tailgate and home gate needs. They have the largest selection of Rebel gear in central Mississippi. So throughout the month of October, mention Rebel Grove at checkout. Receive 15% off your entire purchase. You can also use it online. Just put Rebel Grove in the coupon tab at checkout to get the same discount. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast. You get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. We are also brought to you by Splinter Creek. Splinter Creek's a gated conservation community. It's located 8 miles southwest of Oxford, about 75 minutes from the Memphis airport. SplinterCreekMS.com, 601-898-2772. That's going to get you in touch with the Tom Smith Land and Home agent. They'll guide you on a tour that will blow your mind. It is absolutely gorgeous. 34 lakefront lots ranging in size from 2 to 25 acres, 650 acres of lakes, pine, and hardwood forest, 6 miles of private roads. They've got well-maintained running, cycling, and hiking trails as well. You really need to check it out. Again, SplinterCreekMS.com, 601-898-2772. Speaking of Jackson, Blue Delta Jeans in Jackson today and tomorrow. If you want to get a private fitting, you want to book an appointment, all you have to do is send them an email, info@bluedeltajeans.com. You can also jump in their social media, direct messages. They'll hook you up. And while you have them, ask them about Gino. It's a great new fabric, soft, comfortable. They've got a great group of colors. The sewing begins on Halloween, so don't miss on your opportunity. Reserve your spot in this first run of the great new fabric line from Blue Delta Jeans. We'll have a soft verbal podcast up later today. It is sponsored by the great people at Dead Soxy. If you're searching for a unique way to brand your company swag, if you have a special event to memorialize, Dead Soxy has you covered with their custom sock program. Click on the custom sock link. They'll walk you through the entire process from the complimentary digital mock-up before your order is placed to delivery logistics and even custom packaging. Dead Soxy is your place to create a gift they will use time and time again. With all-inclusive pricing, no upcharges or fine print, the custom sock design process is as simple as it gets. So head over to deadsoxy.com. That's deadsoxy.com/custom. And remember, you can still save 30% on general orders with the promo code Rebel Grove. As always, stay soxy. Had a Mind on My Money podcast published yesterday. I'm taping another one today that you'll probably hear some point in the next week or two. It is sponsored by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. They have clients in more than 20 states. They have advisors in several states as well. Founded in 1997, Pinnacle Trust provides detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and much more. At Pinnacle Trust, investing is treated like a commodity, and decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. Regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you. They'll listen to your goals, study your expenses, and put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan that's built just for you. To learn more about Pinnacle Trust, go to pintrust.com. That's P-I-N-N-Trust.com. Mention you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off your first year's fee. Yeah, Tua's elite. That receiving core is elite. They can run the football.
Receiving core is maybe the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, and they can really – Najee Harris is an underrated player in the league because he gets overshadowed on his own offense. Their offensive line
and
is good.
And, you know, this is new for Alabama, but we've both covered teams where your offense is so good and scores so fast it actually hurts your defense. Like, it is impossible with that offensive system and how fast they score to have a team that's a top 10 scoring defense. Like, you just can't do it. The other team gets too many chances.
Yeah, Ole Miss had 88 snaps against Alabama.
Mm-hmm. And so you're going to break down on three or four of them. I mean, and also, when you're constantly playing with a four-touchdown lead, I don't care what anybody says, defensive players don't play as hard in that situation because they don't have to.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I've been reluctant – and I'm this is going to come across like I'm making fun of other people on the beat. I'm not. It's a storyline that some of the people on our beat have been trying to sort of massage, if you will. Is, you know, did you guys get confidence against Alabama? And it's a fair question. I'm just reluctant to go there because at one point that game was 45-10. And I don't want to take anything away from the 21 points that Ole Miss scored after that because – you know, past Ole Miss teams might have rolled over and stopped at 10. And they kept going, and they made it a far more respectable finish, and they played a really good fourth quarter in Tuscaloosa, which is commendable. That being said, you do have to factor in the possibility that Alabama's defensive guys looked at each other, and they didn't say these words, but, well, here we go again. We just blew out another team. We're up by 5 touchdowns. There's not a chance in hell that we lose this. Let's just finish up.
Yeah, I mean, Missouri basketball the last few years, like, they've had a lot of games where they got down by 22 points in the first half, and at some point in the second half made it like a 4-point game, and everybody said, oh, man, I'm really impressed with how they fought back. Well, you know what happened when the other team got 22 ahead? They just said, man, let's get to the end of this, and then Missouri made a run, and they go, I guess we're going to have to try for a couple more minutes, and I tried for a couple more minutes, and the game was over, and again, I know that sounds insulting to Ole Miss, and I don't mean it that way because I do think this is a team that can come in and put up some points. I think they're probably a bowl team this year, which I didn't see before the season. But, I think taking much out of a game that you lose by 4 touchdowns, that you are down by 5 touchdowns, is a little bit of a fool's errand. And that's not specific to Ole Miss. That's a general thought.
Yeah, the two things don't have to be mutually exclusive either, but it's one of those things you just don't want to – I've been reluctant to make too big of a deal out of it because you have to at least acknowledge the possibility that the other team wasn't particularly dialed in at that moment.
Yeah, and I mean, there was some of that Missouri at Wyoming. You know, they were down, I don't know, 17 in the third quarter, and everybody got the ball back and had it at the 20-yard line and a chance to win, and there was a little – I said before we went down, I said – I don't want to hear any of this. I really like the way they fought. Like, I won't write that. You just lost to Wyoming. You shouldn't have been down 17 to begin with. I don't really care if you almost kind of won because you didn't.
You brought up bowls.
And they didn't say much of that.
Yeah. You brought up bowl games. Where does the whole NCAA eligibility, postseason eligibility thing stand right now? I know that the NCAA is a fine-oiled machine. They work quickly.
Yes.
They get these things ironed out efficiently, and so everything will work out in time. But what's the latest?
Yeah, no answer. as I understand it, the school will get a week's notice that a ruling is coming and then 24 hours notice on what that ruling is. To my knowledge, they've gotten neither of those, so it will be minimum end of next week before anything would come out. And the timeline is pretty interesting as it relates to Ole Miss. I mean, last year, I guess, Ole Miss had its appeal hearing. I forget if it was one day before or one day after the same day Missouri had it this summer. Ole Miss got its ruling on November 1st. So I guess that's what we're looking at this point, you know, late October, early November. The interesting thing will be if we get to mid-November and there's been no ruling, Missouri theoretically could be in a position where it has a chance to play in the SEC title game. Now, yeah. I don't think that's going to happen because, A, I don't think they're winning in Athens, and, B, I don't think Georgia's going to lose twice. So, you know, it's very unlikely. But I'm just saying, what if they get to the Florida game and they're in a position where, hey, if they win this, all of a sudden all they've got to do is beat Tennessee and Arkansas to go to the SEC title game. Theoretically, they can, because that bowl ban, while everybody acts as if it's in place right now, technically right now it's not in place. It's on hold until a final decision is made. So if you would get to December 4th or whatever it is and no decision has been made, if Missouri were to win the East, it could play in the SEC title game because no decision had finally been made.
Ole Miss never had any real confidence that it was going to get a lot of relief in its appeal.
And yeah.
It ultimately did get some relief. It didn't get the bowl relief, but frankly, it didn't care about that. Does Missouri have confidence that there's some relief coming? Because it feels like it's a pretty weak case the NCAA has.
I would say there's hope. I don't think I would say there's confidence. What gave some Missouri people more hope was the Mississippi State ruling. Basically, Mississippi State was accused of all the same things Missouri is and did not get a postseason ban. So I think a lot of Missouri fans are looking and saying, if anyone on this appeals committee has any sense, they're going to look at this and say, well, look, what they did is basically what Mississippi State did. So if Mississippi State can play in a bowl game, Missouri should be able to play in a bowl game. Now, you and I both know that everything the NCAA does is ruled by logic and common sense.
Yes.
And one decision always is very similar to the next decision. So obviously that's going to happen. Oh, nobody here has any clue. I mean, I tell, you know, once a week we'll get a post on our message board. Hey, I talked to a guy who thinks it's going to get overturned, or I talked to a guy who thinks it doesn't. That's nothing more than anyone's opinion. Literally no one has any idea except the five people who heard the appeal.
Real quick before we let you go, there's a lot of excitement here about basketball. Ole Miss went to the tournament last year, appears to have a tournament-caliber team this year. I was talking to Andy Kennedy about it. There's two or three teams at the top of the league that are, you know, probably two, Kentucky and Florida, that are better than everyone else. And then there's this group of, I mean, eight, nine teams even that could all be really good. Where does Missouri fall going into this?
Well, it's interesting. I think Missouri fans are overestimating what this team can be, and that tends to happen when your head coach comes out and says, you know, in the middle of last year that he thought this year they would have a chance to win the SEC, and then he has said in the preseason, if we're healthy, I think we're an NCAA tournament team. I mean, when a coach is saying that, then yeah, there's preseason optimism everywhere, but you don't generally hear coaches make statements like that. So, you know, fans, I think, view this as a team that can be like top four in the SEC. I think that's too high. I also think the national expectations are way too low. I've seen a lot of people picking Missouri 13th in the SEC, and like, look, I'm not sure how good they're going to be, but I think they're going to be quite a bit better than that. You know, I think the goal for this team is to make the tournament. I could see this team as like a, you know, kind of 21 win type team that goes to Nashville just trying to make sure we don't fall on our face in like that, you know, 7-12 game or whatever, and get into the tournament as like a 7-8-9 seed. I think that's what this team is if things go well. Obviously, there's a lot of questions, and, you know, this is the first time in 3 years at this point that Konzo Martin will actually get to coach the team he recruited. His best player has been hurt in the preseason each of the last 2 years, so health is a big deal, but I think they're better than national people think and maybe not quite as good as some local people think.
You know, it's funny. You know, Florida and Kentucky are going to be very good. Mm-hmm. They'd have to try hard not to be very, very good. Vanderbilt's going to be very bad. After that, there's not a – I think South Carolina has a chance to be a bad team, but Frank Martin's a good coach, and I'm not ready to ever really – cancel his teams out. I think Tennessee takes a fall, but I don't know how deep the fall is. LSU's going to be
probably
good.
Same with Auburn. They take a step back, but not
to the point
where they used to be.
They're still really talented. Mississippi State's going to be good. Ole Miss is going to be good.
Buzz, Buzz Williams, a really good coach.
Yeah, you know? I've had people tell me, look for A&M to make a giant jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're probably the team that it could be pretty good. You know, Arkansas, I mean, you know, they're going to bring in 7 transfers every year now with Eric Musselman.
Yeah.
So they'll be tough to gauge in the preseason.
And he's had success with all those transfers. He's a good coach in that system, and he's a good X and O coach. The guy at Oates at Alabama is a good X and O coach. Those teams are going to be better coached this year than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I think SEC basketball is the exact opposite of SEC football. In SEC football, there's an elite top, a terrible bottom, and not a whole lot in the middle. SEC basketball is almost all middle, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty good middle where 11 could beat 4 on any given day. That can't happen in SEC football this year. There's 3 great teams, 2 or 3 pretty good to good teams, and then like 5 or 6 real bad teams.
Yeah, I agree. It's much more predictable. I mean, I use Georgia as an example in basketball. They're not going to be a tournament team in all likelihood, but they have – that freshman has a chance to be a top 5 NBA pick. And in basketball, if you have a player he's that good on the floor on the night that he's on, well, they can beat most anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it takes one player to turn around the basketball program. You know, and that's the difference. You can't turn around a football program in 1 year. There's just too many guys. But you can take a bad basketball program and be pretty good the next year if you get the right guy.
So give me the what's the weather? It's going to be cold up there for Saturday night. Is that right? Ole Miss people need to be bundled up. What's the environment?
Your people will believe it is cold. People up here will believe it is fall. It is actually going to be the coldest day of the year so far, I think, or at least since, you know, spring started. It's going to be like 51 is a high. Probably will be lower than that, I would guess, low 40s during most of the game. As far as I know, it's not supposed to rain or anything like that. So, and you know, it'll be interesting. Missouri should be pretty full. Attendance has not been good this year. They've had rain the last 2 home games. The opponents haven't been exciting. But this is homecoming. I think if it's not sold out, it's going to be pretty close. Primetime game, and I mean, Missouri fans have their sights set on, look, we should clearly go to Athens, Georgia at 7-1, so this is kind of step one there.
Your wife's going to be out of town. The house is open for all of my subscribers and listeners, so what time does the party start?
Well, I mean, let's see, 6 o'clock kickoff. I assume I will get done somewhere around 12:45.
No, I meant Friday night.
Oh, Friday night. Yeah. No, my family is in town Friday night. We actually have a social engagement Friday night, so they're not invited to that because it's not my house.
But they can come to your house at 1 in the morning on Sunday morning and party until the sun comes up?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be up early. Come on over. We'll have some mimosas while I write my Sunday stories.
Awesome. All right, mimosas at the DeArmond house on Sunday morning. Gabe, thanks for the time. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks to Gabe for his time today. We'll jump into Jeffrey in a second. Before we do that, I'll tell you about Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market, a leader in condo financing, the float down option, and with rates as low as even about 2 years. Good time to talk to Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com. Podcast is brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. You know, they provide premium lawn care throughout northern Mississippi, but they offer a lot more. Also, MasterCuts will build your custom playgrounds, retaining walls, pool decks, outdoor living spaces with paver patios, forestry mulching, and much more. The path to your dream backyard easier than you think. Find them online at gomastercuts.com for a free quote. Or that same free quote at 662-607-7773. That's gomastercuts.com. Also, with flu season quickly approaching, Tyson Drugs and G&M Pharmacy have flu vaccines available with a $0 copay on most insurance plans. No one has time to wait in line for the overworked pharmacist at most chain drug stores. So stop by one of their locally owned pharmacies where they have multiple pharmacists available, dedicated to getting you in and out as quickly and painlessly as possible. Tyson Drugs is on the square in Holly Springs. G&M is in Oxford on South Lamar Boulevard. Go see them today or give them a call at 662-236-2222. Podcast also brought to you by Visit Oxford. VisitOxfordMS.com is the website. Bookmark it. keep it nearby as you see what's going on in town every single week. There's no home football game, but those are back in a week or so, but still plenty to do, plenty to places to eat, places to stay, and more with Visit Oxford. Visit OxfordMS.com/events to find out more. Now, here's Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey, welcome into the show. Appreciate you spending some of your Thursday morning with us. How are you?
I am great, Neil. I offer you condolences. I know as a lifelong Braves fan.
It's a brutal loss for someone who's a lifelong Braves fan. And then last night, for about 2 hours, when it looked like the Dodgers were going to win, I was a lifelong Dodgers fan, and I wake up this morning to find out that I'm a lifelong Nationals fan. It has been a whirlwind, really.
Well, I'm just glad to know that after you set up like that, I'm glad to hear that you're supporting the Nationals throughout this National League Championship Series. But
you know, Jeffrey, I'm a capitalist, and I'm stumbling across a business model.
Yes. I think there is certainly the opportunity there. And
people should pay me to not cheer for their team.
I openly admit I am in picks today. The fact that I have no idea why the Iowa Penn State game is in there, and I legitimately think, just having been a fan of Greatest Pod in the South, I legitimately think it's in there because you think Iowa's going to win or like Iowa in some capacity, and therefore I picked Penn State.
Well, it's a smart pick on your part, and your premise is correct. I was invited, believe it or not, to a Iowa tailgate, and I'm going to make this happen at some point because, you know, you only live once.
You do. And when you go to Iowa City, you have to.
And go to an Iowa game. Someone said, hey, tickets are taken care of.
It's going to be the king.
To the tailgate. I do love Iowa's uniforms. They are, you have to admit.
The black with the yellow, absolutely.
Is scorching
cool helmet,
hot.
Cool helmet. No, I'm with you.
As good of a helmet as there is in football.
Yeah, I've no argument with that.
And so I just I have an affinity for the Hawkeyes, and so we added that this week. And I think the Red River Shootout is one of the cooler games in college football. I like it.
Yeah, no, I was fine with that because like that was a marquee game, and I guess both teams with Iowa and Penn State are ranked. But I figured that had more to do with. Your growing affinity for a place that you've never been.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, you want to start football or baseball? It's just
no, let's start with baseball because I want to discuss this with you.
Okay.
All right. I'm Braves fans. I promise you, this is not rubbing it in. I think I have a proven track record of accepting that my favorite baseball team comes with certain things that I do not myself fall in line with, nor do I agree with. And most of it is our fan base. But with that being said, Neil, if I would have scripted out game five to you, and I would have told you the Cardinals are going to put up 10 runs, they're only going to get 5 hits. I believe there were 3 errors. There were 4 walks, and there was a strikeout that resulted in a run because the ball got by the catcher. If I would have told you that would be the first inning of the Braves of the elimination or whatever deciding game.
Yeah.
It's not really an elimination game. Everyone, you know what I mean? Like it's a deciding game.
Yeah.
If I would have told you that that would be the first inning of a deciding game, you would have looked at me and said, "Oh, come on, even that's too much." Like you would have gone, "I can get maybe 4, maybe 5, but come on, 10 in that fashion."
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know because here's the thing about the Braves. And when people say that the history doesn't matter, and sometimes I do this, I say history doesn't matter, and then I talk to people that are around organizations and such, and they'll tell you it doesn't matter, but the media talks about it so much that the players start thinking about it. And Atlanta hasn't won a postseason series in forever. It's been a long time. And they didn't win last year, but nobody thought anything of it because they were so young. And this year, a couple of things happened that are really interesting with the Braves. This year, they won a bunch of games. They made a big acquisition midseason with Dallas Keuchel. They spent the money on Donaldson in the offseason. Acuna's a super, Acuña's
a
superstar.
Won a bidding war, and he played well.
Yeah, Acuña's a superstar. Freeman's one of the most underrated players in the game. Albies is terrific. Swanson is terrific.
Also, shout out to him for learning how to hit.
Yeah, he's a pro.
Now he's starting to come up. If he can hit, I mean, obviously he was playing well, so I'm not like saying that's the new, like, I'm not the guy that goes whatever you, when you start playing well, that like that's the new bar for you. But if he starts hitting at a level in between what he hit this postseason and what he has been really the last year or so, considering how good he is defensively, that is, I mean, I guess that's why he went number 1-1, you know, 1-1. So.
Yeah, you know, he's terrific. And so, you know, and Soroka is a potential Cy Young Award kind of a caliber pitcher. They've got all these pieces, and yet there's already this narrative that is building around that organization that they choke in the postseason, that they get tight, literally tight in the postseason, and you saw it in Game 4. Because I think even a Cardinal fan would admit this. One of the beauties of our friendship, we can bullshit about Cubs Cardinals, but at the end of the day, I think we both really watch a lot of baseball, so we can have an intelligent conversation about it. If you watched Game 4 as it unfolded, you thought, this series is over today. The Braves are about to put this thing away. And yet, I think Acuña had a triple and a double to lead off innings and never scored.
They took one out of the Cardinals playbook.
They got so tight. Yesterday, when Fulton Avitz walks Fowler to open the game, I immediately thought, uh-oh.
Well, I will say this. I agree with you. I do, because I told you the whole time, like, this was not me being a Cardinals fan and you know, pumping up the opponent. As someone who watched the game with the perspective of wanting the Cardinals to win, I consistently felt like the Braves were the better team. I felt like every game the Cardinals won, they were very fortunate. Now, in fairness, that is kind of what the Cardinals did all year. I told you it took me like 163 games to figure out what the Cardinals are, but I did figure out what they are. They're an extremely good defensive team that plays close games, and they make you knock them out.
Yep.
They did it all year.
Yep.
And they will let you beat yourself. And that's why oftentimes when they go up against the significantly better rosters, it's not all that competitive. But against a lot of teams, it's worked, and now they got a little momentum on their side. But I just felt like watching the games, I felt like the Braves were the better team. And then yesterday, I think what was very clear to me is after Fulton Weiss's last start where he was so good, I think basically – I don't know if it was Schilt, I don't know if it was the hitting coach, I don't know if it was someone in the locker room. They go, if you see slider, you spit on it.
Well,
we are not swinging at it. We are not chasing it.
Yeah,
he could not get it in the zone, and he kept throwing it because it was an out pitch, but he kept throwing it.
And the other thing they did, and now look, one of them should have been a double play. We'll get to this in a second. They game two of that series when he pitched, or game one?
Game two, where he was so dominant.
Where he was dominant. They rolled over a lot of pitches. And in this game, when he was on that outside corner with two strikes, they just took him to right field.
And you're right. The errors, obviously.
The Freeman error was the one where I went, oh, God, they're so tight.
He forgot who was running.
Yeah, that's Molina. You field that ball. Just, you're okay. You turn two. It's 1-0 at the end of the first, at the end of the half inning. And, yeah, I mean, look, one run, I thought it was – I'll give Schilt credit. His postgame speech was silly, but his and throwing at Acuña.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I just thought it was nothing but pure class.
Oh, God.
Classy.
The throwing at Acuña in the middle of the game, of a game that's completely out of hand, was just whatever. Anyway, give him credit. They
bunt. The game the right way?
They bunt with nobody out, first inning. He knew – I'll give him a ton of credit here. The psychology of that stadium. Hey, if we, being the Cardinals, get ahead here, we're going to tighten the vise a little.
No, and this is I mentioned it on Calkins' show yesterday. Listen, it's not so much a situation where I sit there and go like, oh, history is all that matters. It is a situation, though, where I do believe in a Game 5 atmosphere getting tight. And I'm not even talking about the baseball team.
Have you seen the stats on this? I don't know the exact stat, but after the two games last night, in deciding games of playoff series, since whenever, the home team is 56-60.
It makes sense to me because, and I would like to see the stats on when the road team scores first. Because I'm telling you, I felt the same way last night. I know you went to bed, so you didn't see it, but it's 3-1.
Yeah.
Roberts brings in Kershaw. He was smooth in the seventh. He gets to the eighth, gives up that first home run, and you could feel it. It was one of those, like, damn, home runs. And then the very next pitch, he hangs another slider, and it was an even bigger home run by Soto. And you could sense it. You could feel that stadium get nervous, and you could feel the Dodgers tighten up. And I texted Giannotto. Giannotto's from D.C., so he's a Nats fan. I texted him. I go, listen, I don't know if this means y'all are going to win because we both watched your bullpen, but you can tell which team is playing more loosely and which team is playing tight right now. And I'm not saying, like, because I think the biggest problem was Joe Kelly was throwing the first inning. Joe Kelly was unhittable because his slider was so sharp. I don't even think he threw a fastball, Neil. I think he threw 12 pitches and they were all just disgusting breaking balls.
In the
and I'm
ninth
yelling.
Inning?
I'm yelling, why are you swinging at these? Like, he's not throwing a fastball, just lay off. But in fairness, it's because it's a freaking good pitch. Like, that's why they're swinging at it. And then you could tell right off the bat in the next inning that slider was not sharp anymore. And I turned to my brother, who pitched at Ole Miss, pitched at a pretty high level. I go, you got to go get him. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, he's been rolling. I go, go get him. The breaking ball's not there.
Well, and then Jansen's in your bullpen, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, there's a couple of things here, and I know people want us to get to football, and we will in a second. But
by the way, it's by the same logic that I don't – listen, I know context matters, and it does, and I'm not taking away – I'm not trying to revise a season for a team and whatnot, but I never bought the narrative that Ole Miss would have gone into Starkville and done in 2015 – what they did to them had that game been for the West.
Yeah, it's a totally different – I completely agree. It would have been a completely different feeling in the air.
Yes, that game was – that was the – Ole Miss played with reckless abandon, nothing to lose, and by God, they kicked their ass.
And when you're tight, it's different.
Yes.
And the Dodgers were
those
tight.
Those teams had a tendency to get tight in – those types of games.
You know, the middle of the Nationals lineup, everybody, you know, they lost Bryce Harper, and look, the people that say Harper's whatever, Harper's a great player. But Rendon's a great player, and this Soto kid is a superstar. He's the best 20-year-old baseball player on the planet. He is a superstar. If you all have not kept up with baseball until the postseason, this kid's done this all year. He is a monster. Why did they let Kershaw throw to those guys in the eighth inning when they had Kelly and they had Jansen? That's the questioning I have. I went to bed after seven innings. I thought, they're done. They got it. It's over. I made the joke about the Dodgers thing. The people who don't understand that it's all just me being goofy and having fun because I was going to cheer for the Dodgers against the Cardinals. So I thought the Dodgers would win. I thought at the end of seven innings, I thought now they're going to go to Kelly, they're going to go to Jansen, and this thing's over. You cannot – I woke up at 5:45, looked at my phone, and I cannot describe the shock. It's the first 7 months I was like, oh, my God.
It's one of those situations where – and this is my theory, and you tell me it's half-baked, but this is my theory, and I still have some friends that are big Dodger fans, so it's somewhat educated. I think the whole playoff Kershaw narrative, listen, I don't think you can sit there and go, he's never been like aggressively bad in the playoffs. but he's clearly not as dominant as he is in the regular season, and he's clearly like not like Kurt Schilling. Kurt Schilling is a guy that was above average.
Yeah,
as a regular season pitcher.
Regular season. Yeah,
but
sure.
He's one of the splits between him and the postseason. He's one of the most dominant postseason pitchers ever.
Yeah. So Roy Halladay was that way. Join the Ole Miss football team back at the Vaught on October the 19th as the Rebels take on Texas A&M. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit OleMissTix.com. The 2019-20 Ole Miss hoops season just around the corner. Don't miss any of the action of Coach Yo's women's basketball team and Coach Kermit Davis's men's team this season in the pavilion. For tickets, visit OleMissTix.com. Join the Ole Miss men's and women's hoops teams on Friday, October the 18th for Square Jam, presented by Oxford Orthopedics on the Oxford Square. Bring the family out to the free event, featuring skills contest, player autographs, and a dunk contest to cap off the night. For more info, visit OleMissSports.com and the Red Hot Ole Miss Volleyball Team, winners of their 12th straight as they beat Missouri last night. They're back home in the Gillum Center on Sunday as they take on the Auburn Tigers at 1:30. Admission is free. For more info, go to OleMissSports.com. And don't forget the Ole Miss soccer team at home Friday, October the 10th. They host the Florida Gators in an SEC showdown. Admission is free, so bring the family out and enjoy some Rebel soccer. Picks are up on rebelgrove.com. They're sponsored by Southern Craft Stove and Tap, located off Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue. Southern Craft Stove and Tap places an emphasis on food and atmosphere, mixing the quality of fine dining with a come-as-you-are environment, featuring 30 craft beers and offering a high-quality selection of cuisine and libations. Southern Craft Stove and Tap has you covered for any occasion. Join them for lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, or have your favorites catered out. Catering orders placed online currently receive $25 off any order totaling $100 or more. So avoid the chaos of parking on the square. Head over and experience carefully crafted dishes with your favorite Southern ingredients. Southern Craft Stove and Tap, Highway 7 and Sisk Avenue in Oxford. Podcast also brought to you by the Westin Jackson. Westin Jackson, a Marriott property in downtown Jackson. You can restore serenity to your soul at Soul Spa. It's the ultimate luxury spa experience in downtown Jackson. And also you can gather at Estelle Wine Bar and Bistro, sip on a creative craft cocktail, or enjoy their curated wine list. It is open for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Chef Caden's mission is to connect guests with the community through local partnerships. So gather at Estelle in the Westin Jackson tonight. And we're brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you've been thinking about that golf trip with the guys, you'll never forget. An anniversary trip she'll never forget. You want to go to Florida, the Caribbean, Scotland, Ireland, you name it, Italy, whatever the case may be, you need to get in touch with John Edwards. He's part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows him to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits that are simply not available to other travelers. All you do is you give him a call, 901-494-3387. Give him an email, jedwards@regencytravel.net. Give him some parameters. Give him a budget. He will give you options, and you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. And first-time clients save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's a big part of Savannah Square. It's a new 9-acre development, 0.7 miles from the Oxford downtown square, conveniently located east of North Lamar, just a short stroll from the Midtown Shopping Center, which houses Snack Bar and BBB and all that stuff. There's a number of properties that are at different stages of development. If you're coming up next weekend for Square Jam, for the football game, get in touch with Harry. Check those out. Look at the model home at 215 William Street, SavannahSquareOxford.com. Or 662-801-5621. And we're brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. And with OUB, you get Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account. OUB pays customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 with Kasasa, and they also refund ATM fees nationwide. OUB also has a commercial checking account, now paying 1% interest as long as you keep $10,000 in the account. It comes with fully interactive online banking. To learn more, go to liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Right, and so I think there is this, I think especially amongst Dodger fans, there's, and probably that team, there's this appreciation of how good he is, and there's this idea that they want to keep giving him chances to, like, have a moment. Because to me, that's the only reason you bring him in yesterday, because almost every time he's pitched in that situation, we're bringing us, you know, and on top of that, I don't like bringing starters in relief. I was fine with it with Washington, with Corden, because Washington's bullpen is not good. But in general, when you have a good bullpen, a bullpen that's been successful this season, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think it's just because, like, there's this idea of they want to show the world that he is this good, and they want to keep giving him a chance and go, see, playoff Kershaw. There you go. That's playoff Kershaw. That's kind of like that. Remember when Dabo started using Clemsoning against people?
Yeah. See, here's my thing. When you win 106 games in baseball, it's a lot of wins. Don't deviate from your path. 106 and 56 one way. Just keep doing it that way.
I don't know. I mean, that's the problem with the Dodgers. Like, I've always wondered how much is Dave, like, you know, I know Dave Roberts, the question today will be,
is he fired?
I don't know. The Dodgers are so weird. Like, they seem to be like a team that, like, makes, like, they basically, like, give him a playbook and he runs the plays that they want him to run.
Yeah,
so,
that plan, by the way, was not, you know this. Andrew Friedman and everybody in that organization was involved in the pitch plan for game five. The truth is, they should have never gotten to a Game 5. And when you get to a Game 5, so I'm about to transition to this Houston game tonight, which I think is huge. I mean, for the landscape of baseball, this Houston game tonight is huge. If you're the Astros and you see the Cardinals win in Atlanta, you see the Nationals go to Los Angeles and win, are you a little nervous about the pesky Rays in your place in Game 5?
I don't know. It's kind of, personally, like me, I'd spin it the other way. It's like, well, we can't lose two, and we have Garrett Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, Glasnow's been good, but
yeah, Glasnow's been really good. I mean, he's been. Boy, the Pirates lost that trade in ways that are difficult to calculate. But tonight, if Houston loses, it's the end of Garrett Cole. I think they'll have a hard time keeping Joe Espada as their bench coach. He's going to go somewhere. This is a big night for the Houston Astros. And if they win, you know, that series with the Yankees is a match of heavyweights, and whoever wins that series would be the prohibitive favorite against either the Nationals or the Cardinals, because duh. Give me your quick, before we get to football, give me your quick thoughts on Nats Cards.
I mean, the Nationals are still better. The Cardinals' home field didn't really matter all that much. I guess they got the split, but
they played each other in a series in September with both of them having a lot on the line, and the Cardinals,
I think we went 5-2 against them.
The Cardinals were clearly better in that series in September.
I mean, I think the answer is because the Cardinals play so many close games that they're going to get into the Nationals bullpen. And while obviously everyone, you know, yesterday the whole, like, you know, is Flaherty, do you take Flaherty out early and save him? I'm like, no, like, get there. Like,
Oh, no, no, you let him throw. Because
yeah, like, he's already, like, go.
He's not going to pitch again until game three of the series, and he's lined
right.
up for game.
The advantage is, I mean, Strasburg had a throw last night, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now that the Nationals won, you get home field, so you can throw Michaelis at home, which is much, much better.
Yeah, they'll go Michaelis, Wainwright, then Flaherty. I don't know who their game four starter will be.
Hudson, probably. I guess it kind of
Hudson will go in game four. Michaelis in five. Wainwright in six. And then they'll have Flaherty for a seventh game at home, which would be a considerable advantage. I would think the Nationals, man, I don't know. They had to fire a lot of bullets to get there.
Yeah, I mean,
I would think Dave Martinez is sitting down today and trying to kind of figure it out. It feels like they almost go in with just sort of a whatever happens in game one happens, and then sort of set it up from there.
Yeah, and I think their message will be, let's just keep tearing the cover off the baseball, and we'll figure out, we'll get enough pitching. You know what I mean?
The middle of their lineup is special. Rendon,
I mean, I think that's
Soto
kind of the biggest difference in the Nationals. And like, if you look at, I think the reason why the Nationals and the Cardinals are advancing that doesn't get discussed, the middle of both the Cardinals and Nationals lineups delivered.
Yeah, they did. Ozuna had a big series. Molina had a big series. Goldschmidt had a big series. They got it done. Freddie Freeman was non-existent, and probably as, I hate to pin it on him because he seems like a great guy and he's a former Gold Glove winner, and for the longest time I think he's been one of the more underrated players in the game because the Braves were rebuilding, but in the big moment he just wasn't there, and I'm sure he's injured and there's more to it, but that's a serious loss that's going to haunt the Braves. I think they're still a great team moving forward, but it haunts them a little bit. That's one that's going to sting. There's just no way around that. While I've got you, let's transition to some football real quick. You mentioned picks; they're up. A lot of drama at Neil's Picks headquarters last week. Lots of drama.
You got some locker room problems. Like I'm just gonna listen. I know everyone else in the media is afraid to call you out. I'm fearless. You got locker room problems.
We do. We have locker room problems with interns now, with security guards. We're heavy handed with protesters. There's a lot going on, but. We persevere, and we head into another week. Not a lot of great games, but some interesting games. South Carolina getting 24.5 at Georgia. It's a lot of points, Jeffrey.
It's a lot of points, but typically when Georgia's played early, they've kind of dominated and covered. And I don't know. Like, I mean, that was just the thing. I just kind of – my new formula has been just stick with my metrics, stick with my numbers. I'm trusting the process. And the process says it's about a touchdown too many, so I'll take the touchdown.
Yeah. Tennessee's an interesting game here. Tennessee getting 6.5 at home against Mississippi State. I've got the same thing. No, you've got State winning and covering.
Yes, and
Zach has State winning and covering. Chase has State losing. I think Chase's heart's making this pick. I've got State winning but not covering.
Correct. And one of the I think the most difficult aspects about watching Mississippi State this year is applying the context of how they look when the suspended guys play versus when they don't. And they have to sit out 8 games, so they're trying to pick the 4 games. And to me, it looks like the games that they're going to pick are, they picked Kentucky. I think they're going to pick this one. And then they're obviously going to pick the Egg Bowl.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be some type of toss-up between Arkansas and A&M.
Yeah.
He's
playing them in the games he thinks they can win.
Right. And I think the flip side is, if he thinks that they can beat Arkansas without him, I think he'll sit on the Arkansas game. But if Arkansas starts to kind of get a little frisky, I think he knows he can't risk it.
I put the Red River shootout in just because, frankly, I had a caption that I wanted to get to, and there was only one way to get to it, and that was to include the game. Alabama gives 17.5 at Texas A&M. Let's see. I've got Alabama covering. Chase has Alabama covering. We all have Alabama covering the line. None of us all that bullish on the Aggies at this point.
So I guess go and load up on the old Aggies there. The problem with these games is Jimbo doesn't play them to win. Jimbo plays them to keep them close. Like, he plays for, like, the statement loss. He slows the game to such a gross pace, but I think the difference is Alabama doesn't really – it's not like Alabama – like, if I think that would be a more effective strategy against Georgia.
Yeah, Alabama can score so quickly that I don't know that you can really slow the game down on them.
Right.
They only need 15, 20 seconds to score. They're so dynamic offensively.
Mon's not good.
Now, Alabama's defense is not good. But I think
their linebacker, I don't ever remember their linebackers being this slow.
That's because they're all hurt.
I know every Alabama person on the planet keeps telling me, I forget his name, 35 is a stud. We're watching a different football game because I watched South Carolina just pick on him.
Not even going to fool with Vanderbilt. It is what it is. Ole Miss gets 11 at Missouri. I've got Mizzou winning and covering. You've got Mizzou winning and covering. We both have Mizzou winning by 14. Chase has Mizzou winning by 7. And Zach has Missouri winning by 10 points. I think this line's too low, and I'm not picking on Ole Miss here, but I've got to see Plumlee throw the ball before I'm willing to think that Ole Miss is just going to roll up a bunch of points on a team that has proven. And I know Wyoming did some stuff to them. I get it. That game was
a weird game. Fluky. And listen, when you go to Laramie, weird things happen. Like, I'm not saying it's an outlier. Like, obviously, if they have a running quarterback, it puts pressure on them. But they've been really good against the run. They've been really good at home. Like, I just think this is kind of a bad spot for Ole Miss.
Yeah, I do too. I think next week is Ole Miss's opportunity to steal one.
I agree.
I don't think it's this week.
I think it's next week, and then I think it's the last week of the season.
I do, too. Those are the two that I think they have legitimate chances at stealing a game. Arkansas gets 6.5 at Kentucky. For some reason, I don't know, maybe it's just Campbell's really happy, and that makes me happy. I have this feeling that Arkansas is about to win a game against a bad team, and I do think Kentucky's a bad team with their quarterback situation.
We're kind of using the same logic. I don't know if they win, but I have just felt, for whatever the reason, Kentucky football weirdly is getting, like, in my opinion, too much respect from Vegas and from betting. And, like, I don't know, like, are we missing something? Because I've watched now 4 of their games. You know, they're not good.
No, and since losing the quarterback, they're really not good.
Yes, he was, like I said, is he a guy that I think you can plug on any team and win? No. But for what they asked him to do, he was very good at it.
And then finally, the headliner. And frankly, I'm stunned this line's so big. I'm just stunned. And from
looking, wrong team's favored.
LSU giving 13.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going Penn State, Iowa.
Oh, no. We skipped that. I was just having fun with that game. I do want to get your thoughts on this one because you've got LSU covering a 13-point line, which scares me because it makes me think I'm wrong. Florida gets 13 at LSU, the game 7 o'clock on ESPN. Hopefully we'll have that on here in the studio when we do our first, quote, live show, end quote.
What's the name going to be? I voted, by the way. Look at me. Where's my sticker?
Well, I'm not ready to announce it yet because
in the spirit of what
all has happened around here, I don't know that public opinion really matters.
Yeah, that's a good point. Someone might just strong arm and just get the result through that they wanted.
I mean, why not? It seems to work.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying that rubblegrove.com is a business entity, but I've been told that they are for sale.
I mean, sources say that they can be bought.
Again, I've just heard.
Yeah.
I don't know for a fact, but I've just heard.
You've got LSU winning 41-24. The rest of us have LSU winning but not covering. Chase has it really close. And in fairness to Chase, the computers have it really close.
Yep.
What is it that you see here that makes you think LSU is ready to cover this line?
I think it's a bad spot for Florida. And you're right. The metrics say this should be like an 8-point line. So normally I would go with it. But for me, typically when you see a team have the type of win that Florida had last week, where it's a ton of emotion, a ton of energy, big home win, when you ask them to go on the road, massive letdown. Like, that's just, that's, you know, Chris Felica, the Bear from Game Day, had the stat. In the last 12, the last time 12 ranked teams pulled off a home upset and they faced another ranked team as underdog the next week, they're 1-11 straight up. The one win, however, shout out to the 2014 Ole Miss Rebels defeating A&M. But the problem is that A&M team had Kenny Trill. LSU has Joe Burrows right now, who's just playing elite football. And I just don't think I thought Bo Nix was in for a bad matchup last week. I do not think Joe Burrows is going to crumble under the pressure. Because think back, Auburn had some chances in the passing game, like a lot of chances, and he just couldn't make the plays. I don't think Burrows will have that problem. And then on the offensive end, Trask is banged up. Like, I don't know. This just screams really bad spot for Florida and me.
If Florida wins here, Dan Mullen gets into the conversation for National Coach of the Year.
If Florida wins here, Dan Mullen can maybe afford a loss to Georgia and perhaps still be in the playoff.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's a big spot for both of these teams. And if LSU wins here, and I'm with you, I think they will, I think LSU can handle Auburn, not with ease, but comfortably.
I think they can outscore them.
That LSU-Alabama game
gets really weird because high-scoring games have higher variances of results.
Yeah, that game has track meet written all over it.
Yep. So I can't wait for that to be another 9-6 overtime special.
I know. We'll hype it up as a track meet. It'll be 6-3, someone kicking a field goal to win it.
No, Alabama missing a field goal to tie it at the buzzer.
Well, I kept you a minute or two longer than I said I would. Appreciate the time very much. Talk to you soon.
All right, Neil.